Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo, and today I have a guest, Dr. Richard Gentry. We're going to be talking about childhood literacy. All of us are very much aware of how literacy in this country has diminished, and it's really a pathetic rate as far as I'm concerned. And it starts in school. Well, what if you would be able to, as a parent, or as someone who's working with little people, be able to enable them to read, my goodness, from the time they were just little squirts? Do you think? I mean, just months old. Do you think it's possible? Well, Dr. Gentry believes that it is. Dr. Gentry, welcome to the show.
I am. Hi, Donna. How are you?
Well, I'm wonderful. I really am a strong believer in teaching children to read at an early age. We have a major problem today with literacy with young people. It's really at a very bad level. And I think if parents are aware, anyone is aware of the fact that little people can really pick up on the capacity for reading at a very young age, and they may be saying to themselves, you've got to be kidding. You can't do this with a baby. Yes, you can. Now, Dr. Gentry, you are a nationally acclaimed expert on childhood literacy, reading, and spelling development. You've been working for over 30 years with little people, and you are a former university professor, an elementary school teacher, and you're working as an educational consultant out of Florida. I want to ask you a question. What was it that made you aware that babies were capable of understanding pictures and written words? How did this come to your attention?
Well, you know, it's really interesting. When I the reason I wrote Raising Confident Readers was that a literary agent in New York called me, having heard about my work in beginning reading education for kindergarten and first grade. And what I found is that there was a blind spot in academia in regard to understanding the capacity for learning to read that babies and toddlers really have. And it took me about 3 years of working with parents and synthesizing the research, and quite frankly, there isn't very much research on 2-year-old and 3-year-old readers. But what I found is babies aren't really outliers in regard to learning to read. There are thousands and thousands of babies who are in their first year and second year, and toddlers in their second year of life, who are learning to read, and it's just revolutionary. And, you know, you're exactly right. I think it's going to have huge impact on school reform in America, because the message we need to get out is that children need to enter kindergarten ready for success with reading, and the parent or the preschool caregiver is, in fact, the best first reading teacher.
I agree. Now, one of the comments you make right in the beginning of your book, which I think is extremely relevant, is that contrary to the establishment belief, early readers are almost always pencil and paper kids, and I'm quoting from your book, who write first and read later. They learn to read and write by writing. And it is appalling to me when I hear teachers say cursory writing is a waste of time. Kids are using computers. We don't need to do this. The mind, brain, body connection is incredible. How were you able to discern how important writing is relative to reading ability?
Well, you know, I began by not only synthesizing the available research, but working with really scores of parents who've been successful teaching their very young children to read. And one of the things that we find is that pediatricians say that one of the milestones for the 12-year-old is to be able to hold baby-safe crayons. And if we think about how the brain works, we can really see the connection between drawing and writing and reading. Both are two-dimensional, and babies begin by scribbling and toddlers scribbling, and they can tell stories about their scribbles. Soon they're able to distinguish what a picture that they've drawn and writing. And these are symbolic representations and two-dimensional, just like reading. And in fact, many children do write first and read later, particularly kids who are in their three and four-year-olds. It really helps children to break the code by slowing the process down and trying to think about and ask questions about how words are spelled. It's really a great connection.
I really enjoyed your comment about board books. In today's world, so many times, I think parents are so anxious about so many things that they shouldn't be too anxious about, that when it comes to books, it's like having those board books, and of course, when they're little, they're going to put them in, everything goes into the mouth. Everything goes into the mouth. So parents may think, well, gee whiz, I don't want them to do that. But it's okay, because the children have to be able to use their hands. They use all of their senses to learn. And this is something that you bring out in the book. That
yes,
when,
and
it's very
in
important.
Fact, in fact, babies use their mouths. It's one of the first ways they explore the world around them. So it's absolutely appropriate for, it's absolutely appropriate to begin reading aloud to kids from birth, and for very, very young children, in 3-year-old, 3-month-olds to 5-month-olds, to have are able to respond to pictures, and they should be. You know, we should celebrate when they love books and anticipate the bonding connection that they make with parents when they have book activities, and absolutely exploring books on their own.
Mm-hmm. It's fabulous. Now, you bring out some points of information that I know are true. One, babies can see illustrations at about 3 months of age, and they actually can see colors from the time that they're born, and they do recognize those colors, like red, blue, green, and yellow, and they're able to distinguish them where we recognize their capacity to distinguish them when they're about 4 months of age.
Yes, and initially they only see in black and white, but you're absolutely right. By about 3 months of age, they can they begin to respond to the colors, and it's the bold colors that they respond to first.
And then you talk about babies linking sounds with objects and concepts, and that babies can understand what you're saying and what you're reading 5 months before they can even mouth the words. And I can remember talking with someone about this, and I said, if you understand something, that babies are trying to develop their muscles, the skill of speech has to come from the growth and the development of the muscles in their mouth, and they're going to talk, making all of these sounds, because they are really trying to communicate.
Absolutely, and you know, it's amazing, even since I've after I finished and the book came out last summer, I've gone even deeper and deeper into the whole notion of the wonderful capacity of babies and toddlers. And what's astounding and is really informing our work is that computer technology is uniting a forum of thousands of parents worldwide who are having success with reading, with teaching their babies and toddlers to read. And it's not just book handling and early reading aloud, but by about, you mentioned at 4 to 6 months of age, babies have remarkable capacities to do things with words. They have special recognition memory that they're using. We don't really have a full understanding from research because this hasn't been well researched, but they are probably likely using right brain capacities, and they have special capacities for picking up languages, for memory recognition, and for pattern recognition. And one of the things that's really astounding is to see what from 6 to 8 months and beyond babies can do in regard to learning to read words. And their wonderful computer-driven software now available for parents, so that the parent interacts with the baby in front of the computer screen. Now, Donna, I'm not talking about plopping a baby down in front of a DVD. That's, you know, totally different. Mm-hmm. But parents interacting with babies and you know, 5 minutes a day in word games with that lead to just an explosion of vocabulary and concept formation. I think it's just a revolution in baby reading, and I think the world is ready for this. It's going to be a good thing.
I know of a mother. Her son is now 21 years old, but I knew Ian when he was born. And his mother, when he was under a year of age, went and designed very structured signs. She made them on paper. She used a computer. And she, when he was under a year, put things like door, the words, on a piece of paper. This is a door. Steps. She labeled everything, and she would tell him what it was. This young man was reading before he was 3 years of age, didn't have a problem communicating, and his skill with language was just outstanding.
Well, and that's exactly what I'm talking about. In my book, I have really the same activity. It's called Reading Around the Room, and again, it can start as early as 8 months of age. And I in the book, I describe it as 32-second reading lessons, so that when mom or dad and baby, when it's time for bed, the parent or caregiver points to the word bed that's on the bed and says, "Hey, it's time for bed. Baby can read bed." And points from left to right as she says, or he says, bed. And just like you described, the friend that you had was doing. And remarkably, babies sometimes learn to read the words before they can even speak them.
Mm-hmm.
They can, and you can tell that they learn to read them because you show the word clap and they clap. You show arms up and they hold their arms up, or they can point to their body parts. So it's just incredible capacities that they have for soaking up new information.
Let's talk about something that I know affects people. In fact, it affected me, but they didn't have a label for it. They didn't label me with it when I was in school. Dyslexia. Now,
yes.
Dyslexia is something that can be worked with. We know that today, but what is your positioning relative to this? Because often this isn't diagnosed for many years, and we're talking about a baby. What can parents do to be aware that this isn't something that has to be crippling to a child?
Well, you know, one of the major advantages of early reading is that it alleviates a parent's worry about reading disability later on. We've done a lot of, there has been a lot of work done with, by neuroscientists who are looking at dyslexic versus normal brains and trying to map out reading in the brain. And the one thing that they all agree on is that early intervention is the key. We all know that the brain is has a great deal more plasticity. And it's much more likely to be able to rewire or fix itself. So baby reading is absolutely and early intervention is absolutely an important consideration when we think about when we think about reorganizing dysfunctional or dyslexic reading circuitry. I think there's great promise for overcoming dyslexia. The problem in the United States is that if we wait till kids are in school, it's often between the ages of 11 and 17 when reading disabilities are identified, and that's too late. Now, we never give up with dyslexia. Dyslexics are able to learn to read. They reorganize their brain, but their reading is likely to be slower. One of the telltale signs of dyslexics who learn to read is they are lifelong lousy spellers. So much of this can be likely be avoided if we and rather than waiting to teach reading formally in school, if parents become the first reading teachers, and instead of waiting for the left brain kind of formal instruction that is that we're doing in school, do the informal instruction that's joyful and happy and easy. In a lot of ways, I think it's important to look at what very, very young children can do during this critical period of brain development from birth to age 3 with learning new languages. We know that they just pick them up, that a child who's exposed to English and has another parent who in the same household who speaks, let's say, Spanish, by 3 years of age, they can go to the English-speaking grandparents' home where they only speak English and speak English perfectly, and then they go to the Spanish-speaking home and speak Spanish perfectly. Well, you see, they just have really special capacities, these right-brain language-oriented capacities, and that very much ties into reading ability and dyslexia. Again, there's a lot that's unknown about how it all works. We haven't had sufficient research, but to be able to describe how it works. But there's no question that the way to overcome dyslexia is early intervention, and the sooner sooner kids start reading, the better they are.
Your chapter on repetition, enthusiasm, attention, drawing, those are the words you've associated with the READ, which is read. And the drawing portion of that really intrigued me, because you're saying children will, if you put a crayon, something in their hands where they're able to work with colors or want to write, it really can make a great deal of difference with them, because it's the brain development, the hand coordination development. And you talk about a little girl by the name of Danielle who was 13 months old.
Yeah.
And she loved using colored pens. And her mom said, sure, here you go. She put them in front of her. And she was just doing all kinds of stuff.
Oh, absolutely. And you know what? She is now a freshman in high school, and last year in middle grade school at one of the top schools in Florida, she was the number one student. Now, I don't want to give you the impression that all kids who read early are gifted. That's not the case. Mm-hmm. But it's we can say what you pointed out earlier, that it one of the advantages is it just gives these kids a jump start early on, and if a parent teaches a child to read early, they're likely to come out with a smarter child. But yes, Danielle was a wonderful case study, and she did absolutely wonderful things with drawing and writing, art activities, and in the book I have some of, you can see her going through different phases and see how her her written language gets more and more sophisticated, even at age 3 and age 4.
Let's talk about spelling. There are programs out there that use phonetics. Now, we're talking about babies here, and I know some of my listeners may say, oh, for heaven's sakes, babies, are you serious? They're not going to be involved in spelling? Well, not in the way that we think, but how is it that we can take a student, because you meant to comment about students that are dyslexic, if they have this challenge, spelling is terrible. They're awful spellers. How do we get to that level? What's the best way to approach a child so that they enjoy spelling? We have these kids that go into spelling bees and are just absolutely mind-boggling, but that's a lot of repetition and doing something over and over and over again and practicing and practicing and practicing. What about spelling? How do we evolve into this so it can be something that's not hideous to a kid?
Well, you know, the incredible thing is that for children who are playing those word games when they're 8, 9, and 10 months of age, and learning to, if you can imagine the child in the parent's lap, and instead of the traditional word card with a picture and a word, you might have with the computer, you can have animation, and you can the baby can see the word clap, and there's a cursor that goes from left to right, and then the baby or toddler sees an animation of a baby clapping, or and babies love to see pictures of other babies, and there'd be several pictures in software-driven word games that show babies clapping. Children who have that kind of exposure, or even the reading around the room labeling exposure, often in their twos, they intuit phonics. They pick it up. I can't explain exactly how they do it, but children like Danielle are able to, without formal instruction, learn the chunking patterns of phonics and spelling. Now, this, of course, takes place over a period of time, but it's really extraordinary. And one of the things that I do. I'm known for my work in spelling education. And I'm the author, in fact, of one of the major spelling spelling textbooks in the country. And one of the things that I tell parents is that spelling is at the very foundation of reading. That's what we've learned from dyslexia, that people who are dyslexic have to reorganize their brain, but one thing they never get is that part of the brain that can see the word in the dictionary in the brain. It's a left brain activity. And what we really need, one thing that we really need to pay attention to, not only with children who are beginners, but with all kids, in elementary school, every parent should look for a spelling book in their child's book bag, because what happens when your brain reads a word is that in 250 milliseconds, let's suppose I flash the word baby, in the left side of your brain in a word, an area that's called the word form, that's sometimes referred to as the word form area, There's circuitry that in 250 milliseconds recognizes the sound, the meaning, and get this, the expert spelling. If you have literacy, so you readers literally automatically see spelling patterns in their brain, and it's at the very foundation of competent, proficient reading. So, you really hit the nail on the head. It's so important and very much tied into baby and toddler reading.
Another aspect that you cover, because many times mothers are not aware of how important it is when you're reading that you cuddle the child. And I really like what you say in here, in that babies recognize the mother's voice even when they're sleeping. And they are aware of so many things going on. And I was fascinated with the fact that you recommended in your book, because of other people's recommendation, Blake Moore and Ramirez, that when a mom's nursing and after, you know, just go ahead and read a book. Have something that you can read, or if you know, you know, nursery rhymes or something like that, or you like to sing to the baby, you do that. The child is just absorbing everything. I'm astonished at the amount of vocabulary that you say a baby can recognize. How many words are babies able to recognize by the time they're 6 months?
Well, it's really amazing. In the first 3 years of life, babies who are talked to and read to often have they're getting about 10 million words a year. That is like data going into their brain, and that this is data that their brain is able to work with for language learning. They begin to learn the sounds of the language. They babble the sounds. This reading aloud is going to help them learn word concepts, learn grammar. So it's incredible. And one of the things that works for babies is they are in repetition, reading favorite books over and over. Every time you read that book, the baby is soaking in more, some new information, making a connection, connecting with what he or she has already responded, and perhaps adding something new. So it's early reading and repetition just have extraordinary positive impact on learning to read.
One of the points that you emphasize as well is that you can do simple games with your children when they're real small. And when they're just toddling around, maybe you can put pictures around a room of animals and say, where's the rhinoceros? And ask, they'll just toddle over and they'll touch the rhinoceros because they've seen it. They really recognize so much. They'll they do it so fast that you'll think, gee whiz, are they really recognizing it? But when you do it more frequently, you find they recognize the elephant. They'll know what a dog looks like, a cat looks like. It's really quite incredible what they are able to recognize by the time they're just barely learning to walk. They're just amazing. And then you talk about taking a child's name and printing it out and then cutting it into blocks. And, of course, they should be, you know, fairly good size so their little hands can handle it. But they actually can recognize their own name at a very young age and actually put those little pieces of paper together.
Two and three-year-olds can do that. And it's so important for parents to recognize that what they're doing at home isn't anything like what teachers are doing in school with six-year-olds, non-readers who are being taught formally. Babies can't learn to read from the kind of formal instruction that a six-year-old would get in school because their brains aren't developed enough. They don't have the stamina, for one thing, to follow, to sit still and follow lessons. So all of the activities that you're describing and all the ones that I include in the book are playful and fun game-type activities. And the most important thing is bonding. It's just incredible. The parents that I work with, they say, you know, in some ways the reading aspect something that's not even as remarkable as the bonding that has come out of our book sharing and word games and the work that we do together in literacy. And, you know, it doesn't take much time. We're talking about a regular routine, 10 minutes a day over a period of the first 3 years of life. It's not much time each day, but that's a lot of wonderful exposure and bonding that children that will have a huge impact on the child for the rest of his or her life.
And I think the biggest thing that your book emphasizes is that there should be a joy of reading, because it enables them to enter into worlds and experiences through the written word that they otherwise would miss. And that's something that I think has been forgotten when it comes to teaching a child to read. And it is a very good bonding exercise. Well, Doctor, we are just about out of time here, Dr. Ganti, and I know that you have a website. You can go to jrichardgentry.com. I said Gantry, and I was wrong. jrichardgentry.com. And you'll find more information about this physician's work, and a subject that he dearly loves, obviously. You can tell that by the way he's expressing his information. This book is wonderful. If you know of someone that's going to be having a baby, Raising Confident Readers is a book you should give them. Don't worry about the pablum. Hand them this book, because this is something that will help young parents realize that they can interact with their child in a way that's going to empower them to develop a skill that will make their life richer, and my goodness, they'll be so much more productive with it. Dr. Richard Gentry, thank you so much for being with me today.
Well, Donna, it's just a pleasure, and you know, you just have presented a wonderful show. You really dug deep into that book, and you totally get it. It's one of the best things parents can do. They'll love their children more if they read aloud to them and share books.
I agree. Of course, I'm an avid reader myself. I love books. I have a passion for them. And I appreciate anyone that supports developing that skill, because it is so vitally necessary. Dr. Richard Gentry, go to his website, jrichardgentry.com. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. I know we've got a caller that's waiting on the line, but I want to give out the telephone number for any of you that might be interested in calling in and chatting with me today. 888-627-6008 is the call number, 888-627-6008. Well, let's take the caller so that you'll know what you need to do if you want to call in and chat with me, Donna Sebo. Hello, caller. Welcome to the show.
Hello, this is Cindy.
Hi, Cindy. Where are you calling in from?
Hi, Donna. I'm from Florida. How are you doing today?
Well, I'm doing magnificently. Where are you in Florida?
I'm in Ocala, Central Florida, so North Central.
Wow. You're not going to be hit by the hurricane, are you?
No, I think it's going to miss us. We'll get a little outskirts of rain. We got a little bit of it yesterday, actually, from the outskirts of the rain. But
well, I'm so glad to hear that.
On
boy,
the South
this is
Coast.
The, what's the name of the hurricane? I can't remember now.
Irene. I think it's Irene.
Irene? Boy, Irene apparently is having a bad mood with PMS, hurricane style. That's what
it yes, it is. That's a big hurricane.
Yeah, she's a doozy. So she's just saying, watch me, here I come. I am roaring. Okay, Cindy,
luckily,
let's
going up the East Coast.
Yes, and I hope she doesn't do the damage that they're fearful of her doing. Cindy, well, let's get down to business with you, dear. The first thing that I'm looking at is a lot of hard work. You are really doing a very intense job on cleaning up what I'll describe as the potholes in your life. And I'm seeing you doing due diligence, and I have to compliment you because you're not trying to do everything at once. You're saying, I'll do one thing at a time, and I'm going to make darn sure that these potholes are filled, leveled, and we are not going to be dealing with them again. We're going to do the right job this time around. I'm not taking a chance on anything. I really want to compliment you on this because it would be so easy to get scattered and to try to do just whatever I can get by with. Congratulations. You have really taken a methodology and an attitude of saying, once this is cleaned up, that's it. I'm not going back. So I've got to make sure I do it right the first time. So this is very good on your part. Now, I'm also concerned about something with you because I am perceiving, one, you're having some digestive problems. So you really try to take care of yourself, but you're not absorbing nutrients the way you should. So you should add to a daily regimen, to your daily regimen, nutritional enzymes. Papaya enzymes, you can get at a health food store. They are dirt cheap, and I'd say just add those in. They can't hurt you. They taste good. But you need to do it whenever you take your vitamins, anytime you eat a meal, and your body will thank you for it. It is just one of those things because you have a tendency to get very stressed, and you might be extremely hungry, and then you're eating too fast, and the body just doesn't have enough of those enzymatic properties to digest the food well. So add that little bit of something, and I think you're going to be feeling a whole lot better. And take it easy with the carbs. For some reason, certain carbohydrates just are not sitting well with you. So you might want to, if you want carbs, have them separate in some way. If you, you know, and you have to figure this out. This is something that you're going to figure out on your own, what your body works best with. And I really think you're going to see a big difference in your energy level. You're going to feel so much better about your life and generally about everything that's going on. So I want you to have patience with this side of yourself. And please take time to relax when you eat. Take time to, if you're just going to have a cup of soup, take time to savor it, enjoy it, and you're going to have more energy and be able to feel better afterwards. You're not going to have this problem that stress brings on. What's on your mind, Cindy? What would you like to ask me?
Yeah, that was very good because I'm eating on the run constantly, and I have gained some weight, and I'm not eating that much. I'm eating less than I normally eat, but I've gained some weight, and I'm thinking, what the heck is going on?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm always in a hurry.
Well, remember, cortisol is produced when you're under stress, and that mm-hmm. actually they're finding in research that the body, when it is really stressed, is going to try to retain everything it's got. So you need to be aware of what you're eating and what you're eating together in food combinations. And
okay.
Let's say you grab a piece of pizza or maybe you're grabbing a fast food sandwich or however you do it. Be aware that if you're under a lot of stress, many times that carb that might be in the pizza, which is the dough, obviously, and maybe some of the vegetables as well, but more the dough itself, the body's going to say, okay, I'm under a lot of stress. I got to reserve this because I'm going to need everything I've got. So your body's doing really wacky things here. Take it easy.
Okay.
Be wise. Do a little research. Just don't take my word for it. But just test it out, and I don't think you'll keep this weight on. And by golly, I'll tell you, let me share something with you. I'll never forget a client of mine calling me, and she had changed her job. Her job had shifted her to, let's say, a graveyard shift. Well, her body didn't like the graveyard shift, number one. And she had just made one change in her dietary program. She was eating a donut, one donut, every night. She ended up gaining 15 pounds from eating that one donut every night because of her body schedule being changed. The body wasn't comfortable with it. Her body had a timing that daytime was when she was supposed to be active, not nighttime. And that, in combination with the carb, and then she was adding milk on top of that with the donut, and she put on weight so fast it wasn't even funny.
Wow.
As soon as she started eliminating that, then she began to see a change, but she really had to go to a level of understanding her body chemistry and also the way her body worked with the hours she was putting in. So she knew that it was going to work well for her, and eventually she did change to a daytime period. And it didn't take her all that long to release the weight. So little things can make a big difference.
Okay. Well, my stress has been financial stress, a legal case that I've been involved in that just keeps dragging on and on and on, and kind of relationship stress, so I'm not sure which is the worst.
Well, I'll tell you what. When I'm looking at you and I'm seeing these big potholes, I'm seeing you tackling one thing at a time. There is a lot regarding the legal case that you have no control over whatsoever.
Right.
The relationship,
that's the problem.
No, that's not a problem.
Yeah.
Those are the facts.
Right.
If you are going to follow this through to its final positioning, which I think you will, then you have to allow that that is what you're going to have to do. The other aspect with the relationship is all you have to do is take care of what you need to be aware of and be honest with yourself. And I think this is one of your big potholes, and you're going to do whatever has to be done to level that out. So just do take care of one thing at a time, hon. One thing at a time.
Okay. With the relationship that I'm in, what do you see going on there? There's a very strong connection there, and it's been very long-term and on and off. And I'm giving it another chance because there is such a strong connection. And they said their, you know, priorities have changed. They want it to work. And, you know, do you see that as really being working out?
Well, what you need to do...
Or are we just going back in circles?
You're asking me a question. You're going to repeat the same pattern unless you're really honest with the facts. Not what you wish would occur. And we're not going to have time to go into detail, hon. But... This is something you have to be honest about, period. No games, no gimmicks. Because otherwise, the broken record is going to continue to play. And I'm going to have to go, dear.
Okay.
I've got to go to break pretty soon. But I thank you so much for calling in, and you take care there.
Thank you. I appreciate it. You're wonderful.
Well, bless your heart. I appreciate that. You have a wonderful, wonderful evening now in Florida.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Thanks.
This is Donna Sebo, and I know we're going to take a break. If you'd like to call in and chat, the telephone number to call into is 888-627-6008. We're going to come back in just a moment. Don't go away.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604 or outside of Pierce County, 800-872-8852.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Toll-free number to call in and chat with me is 888-627-6008, and we have a caller on the line. Welcome to the show. First name or initial, and where are you calling in from? Hello?
Hi.
Hi, dear. What's your first name or initial?
Karen.
And Karen, where are you calling in from?
Sierra Vista, Arizona.
In Arizona. All right, great. Now, Karen, the first thing that I am looking at with you is you're moving ahead very slowly towards an objective that's fortunate for you because things are starting to fall into place. And I want to say, remember the song about the inchworm? Inchworm, inchworm, you know, moving ahead, and I don't remember the exact lyrics, but that's what you need to keep in your head. It's the little tiny steps that you're taking and your follow-through that are going to make the difference. And this is significant to you, and I think you're really going to be pleased with the way certain patterns are going to be evolving in your social networking with people. I think your personal life is expanding in a very nice way, and you are going to find yourself feeling that you are finally, after a long, long period, making connections with people that really you are going to find so beneficial to yourself. And I really think this is terrific. So I want you to be patient with yourself. Just realize it's inch by inch. As the saying goes, it's a cinch, and that's what's happening. There's that little image of that little inchworm just moving right along and eventually getting to the destination that you want on a professional level, but also on a personal level. Do you have a question for me today?
Well, I was listening to the last caller, and I heard you talking about diet and nutrition and taking it easy, and I'm really interested in that as far as improving health.
Mm-hmm.
And, do you pick anything up as far as my health?
Well, actually, you have pretty good stamina. I would say what you need to remember is that you are a muncher. You are a person that really does well if you have little bits of food all day long. But you need to remember you need your protein. You are a person that is your stomach doesn't feel good when it is too heavily loaded with food. So you actually do a pretty good job with yourself. One of the things you need to remember is that you do need salt. Sometimes you do without salt, and you'd like to drink a lot of water. Well, just a word to the wise. Remember, if you're drinking a lot of liquid, And especially during warmer months, and you're in Arizona, for heaven's sakes, you guys just cook over there. And you need to remember, you've got to have salt in your diet. Now, I know that every once in a while, maybe you'll have something that is that's ready-made, that's ready to go, and you pick it up and it's convenient. But you're pretty conscientious about what you eat. So I think you just need to remember, don't be afraid of salt. You're not going to overdo it. I mean, let's face it, if something's salted too much, we can't eat it, right?
I know.
So, I mean, it's just like, oh, please, I cannot have that. That's just far too salty. Well, that's our body telling us we don't need it. So this is something that you take care of very nicely. And I really think that you do a pretty good job. Just remember that if you're in a situation, because you're in Arizona especially, and I would say this to any of you that are listening, if you're in hot weather, always add a little bit of sugar and salt to the water that you're drinking. Because what that does, that works with electrolytes in the body. And that's, and you don't need a whole bunch. You might, like maybe to a quart of water, add maybe a teaspoon of sugar or a little bit more if you want, and like a quarter of a teaspoon of salt or a half a teaspoon of salt. Just mix it up and take it with you wherever you go, and you just drink that every once in a while, and you won't have the problem with dehydration. So it's a simple formula. I learned it a long time ago, and it works. In fact, whenever I do public appearances where I'm outside, I try to have that handy so that I'm always bringing that into my body. And you'll find you handle the heat well. You don't have to worry about the negative side effect with salt or anything else because your body's sweating it out. So you're doing pretty good. Is there a reason why you're concerned?
I'm wanting to do self-improvement. It's not concern. It's just self-improvement.
I think all you need to do is continue to do your reading and look at things and remember something. We all have our own particular metabolisms, and what works for one person doesn't work for another. So don't try to fit yourself into a box. Do what you feel is right for your body. Your body, if you pay attention to how it responds, believe me, it'll let you know.
Well, I thank you.
You're very welcome, Karen. You have a wonderful week now.
You too. Thank you.
Bye-bye. This is Donna Seaboy. Have time to talk to anyone else today. Also, I wanted to let you know, tomorrow we're going to be talking about the cosmic internet with Frank DeMarco. This is a man who has done a lot of study and a lot of research when it comes to the understanding of psychic ability and the work of the mind, so I think you'll find him quite interesting. I wanted to share with you quickly before we close out on the show today, since we were talking about children and the understanding that these little people really can learn so quickly. They're so absorbing in everything. I wanted to share this story about a dad. His name was Glenn, and he wrote about an experience that he had had with his little boy one summer. And he said they were on summer vacation, and his son's name was Matt. And Matt was like every little boy. I mean, he was under 5 years of age, and he was just he was excited, and he was talking a mile a minute. He just wanted to do this and that and the other. Well, Glenn was really wanting to spend time with his son, but he was criticizing his son all the time. And he thought, this boy is going to learn how to behave himself, and I'm going to teach him different things, which is what a father should do. And he made it very clear to his little boy, Matt, that he wanted him to behave. There was no ifs, ands, or buts about this. Well, little Matt tried very hard to do what his daddy wanted him to do. And there was a day, about a week after he had been with his dad, where he was so proud of himself because he hadn't done a single thing that caused a scolding from his daddy. He just was so proud of himself. Well, that particular night of that day, when Glenn was helping his son into bed, the little boy said his prayers, and then he looked at his dad, and tears started to come into his eyes, and his bottom lip started quivering. And he asked his son, he said, what's the matter? What's the matter, Matt? And the little boy looked up at his daddy. His eyes were filled with tears and asked, "Daddy, haven't I been a good boy today?" Well, let me tell you. His heart felt like it had been stabbed with a knife. He said, "I had been so quick to criticize and correct my son's misbehavior. But one thing I had not remembered to do, and that was to mention how pleased I was that he was trying very hard to behave." And he said, "One lesson my son taught me that was a very important one." He said, "I never again put my little boy to bed without a word of appreciation and encouragement about what he did." I think that that's a good lesson, not just in our working with children, but with ourselves as adults. Whether it's someone in your house that maybe is just aggravating you no end, or maybe you've got some situation that you're working through with a member of your family, could be someone at work. Remember always, criticism, well, there's a place for it. We all have to learn and grow. But also, recognizing and appreciating is a very important part of life, too. And it should be given. This is Donna Sebo. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. God bless. Have an absolutely magnificent day or evening, wherever you might be. And I'll be back here with you tomorrow. Same time, same place. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.